Hey everybody, this is Tyson Perez with the 1 Degree Podcast. The difference in water and steam is 1 degree. 1 degree is a small change that can make a big difference. Join me as I interview a new athlete every week and hear what they did to get to where they are and what that 1 degree difference was for them. Welcome into the newest episode of the 1 Degree Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Best Ever Pads. They are made 100% in the USA and they are 100% customizable. Go to besteverpads.com, use promo code PEREZ10. My personal favorite is the pad with the fleece bottom, which is called the Fleezer, named after my next guest, Cesar De La Cruz. I hope you enjoy it. Cesar is a 9-time NFR qualifier, won over $1.3 million, one of the best, fastest healers in all the PRCA. Cesar, thanks for joining me, dude.
Oh, I appreciate you having me on the show.
You bet, man. So how's it going? How's the Western lifestyle treating you in this crazy 2020 that we have?
You know, it's been a wild season for me. I started the year off with Spencer Mitchell, and we rodeoed pretty good there for a little while, and he got a little banged up. His knee kind of got banged up, and he took a little time off. And I went and rodeoed for a little while, probably a month after his knee got banged up. And it was so fast out there this year. It was, you know, a lot of the guys were in the same place at the same time. And shoot, it got so fast. And the money, we're open for less money this year. So it was hard for me to keep money together. So I pulled up in August and right about the middle of August. And it was a good time because my good horse, Lucky, he got a little sore. And I like riding him at the rodeos. He's my number one horse. And so it was kind of a good time for me to pull up a little bit. And I started doing roping lessons and private roping lessons and riding a few outside horses. I just got done doing the rope horse maturity a couple of weeks ago. And I helped a buddy of mine, Dakota Kirchhoffer, who's also a best ever guy. He won the world championship there for the rope horse maturity. And then he won the best four-year-old as well. So it's just kind of got home, and I'm getting all my lessons lined out for the winter time over here. So it's been a wild, crazy year for me. Usually I'm rodeoing and jackpotting, and I've never pulled up in my 15-year pro rodeo career. I've never pulled up. I've always kind of stayed out and rodeoed, made enough money to keep going. And this year was real, real tough to keep money around. So like I said, I'm trying to spread my knowledge and teach the younger generation of how to do this game.
Yeah, it is a tough year for everybody. You know, we've never really dealt like this with something like this, to where everything just gets shut down. You know, people losing their jobs, seasons getting canceled, postponed. And when it comes to professional rodeo, you guys aren't guaranteed contracts, guaranteed salaries. You guys don't get paid. Only way for you guys to make money is to go out and win. And that, you know, to me is one of the most, I think, like the special sport, because you guys can make a very, very good living, but you have to go out there and earn it. There's nothing given to you guys. Yes, you have sponsors and they're very, very important to help you get down the road. But if you don't win, you don't get paid. You don't get paid. You don't really support your family. So, you know, during this year, you kind of just got to figure out, you know, like how are you going to get through the year?
Yeah, I got a great wife, Arena. She's beautiful, and she takes really good care of my boys. I got three little boys. Camilo's the oldest one. Gio's the middle one, and Zora's my baby. They're 10, 8, and 5, and they're my world, you know. And when money was starting to get short, I'm sure a lot of the parents that are listening to this thing can understand when you start to stress out about money and stuff. And I just couldn't stay out there. I was winning just enough to provide for the rodeos and stuff, but not enough to bring home money for rodeo payments, or sorry, for house payments and stuff like that. So I had to come home, and I've got a knack in teaching people how to rope. I've always helped people ever since I was a little kid, helped people with the rope, and then it just kind of comes second nature to me. So I'm real thankful that there's a lot of ropers out there still looking for knowledge, and the World Series and the National Finals Rodeo is still going on, and I think they're going to be just as big as ever. So you know, the election is pretty crazy times right now, but rodeo people and country people, they kind of try to stay away from a lot of the politics, and they just kind of live their life. And like me, I got a lesson planned out in the morning and for this rest of this week, and a few jackpots to go to. So staying busy, trying to stay busy.
Yeah, man.
That supports family.
That's it. That's it. You know, it doesn't matter what happens to you. It matters what you do about it. Right. Like we were just, you know, kind of dealt a little bit of different set of hands for this year, but this is just what you have to do. And you're probably considered a more of a veteran nowadays. You were, you know, kind of one of the hot young studs coming up on the rodeo scene, you know, roping fast, kind of more like the stylish type of guy. Like, how'd you get into roping? I know me and you kind of talked a little bit before that we kind of share little similarities where we're kind of almost live like two different lives. You know, we kind of hung out with our friends. I played sports, you maybe a little bit different. I would come home sometimes when I was a kid, you know, put my jeans on, you know, my Western clothes after playing sports, you know, listen to hip hop music, all that type of stuff. And then I'd come home and, you know, play a little cowboy. How'd you get into it?
Well, you know, I come from a long line of cowboys and stuff. It started with my grandfather. You know, he's my hero. He's like John Wayne to me. You know, like he's the coolest guy around, and he's still alive and still around. It kind of gives me a lot of inspiration. He's a tough guy, but he showed me, you know, how to work with horses when I was a kid, and he helped me break a pony when I was a little kid. And yeah, he kind of started me out, and then my Uncle George Aros is an NFR qualifier. My Uncle Victor is an NFR qualifier. I feel like they helped me out, develop my style and kind of get me started in the rodeo game. I used to go to George's when I was a little kid. He kind of started me out. He was pretty much my mentor growing up. And Uncle Victor, like I said, he was the same way. And man, I grew up kind of in the hood a little bit. It was my grandpa, when he first bought the land, he'd tell me stories about how there was nobody around there, and next thing you know, they're building an airport, and they got a bar right next door. It was a Tejano bar. I got the trailer park across the street, you know, there's apartments, you know, right behind our place there. It's just there was a lot of gangs, and it was a little tough for me kind of coming up a little bit. It was hard because I'd go to school and have to be around them guys, and I'd come home and the love of roping, I just wanted to rope. That's all I wanted to do. And so, like, you know, like I'd go to school and I'd just dress the part, you know, bag of jeans, and I'd hang out with all the cool kids, the gangbangers and stuff like that. Just I hung out with everybody, the skaters and everybody. But I just, like I said, when I got home, I put my clothes on and rodeo clothes on, and I'd get outside and I'd go rope, and then I'd go back. And I feel like rodeo was my way out a little bit. To me, like everybody's got their own something they're really good at, and mine was always felt like I was a good roper, and I felt like that was, I believe it as a little kid, that was gonna, I was gonna make the finals. My mom would told me, you know, when I was a little kid, she said, you know, you're my ticket to the NFR, because she had kids when she was young, and she didn't get to go as much, and so she told me that I was gonna make the NFR for her. And so I always had ambitions of that when I was a little kid. I just kind of had that chip on my shoulder, you know. And so I feel like we didn't have a whole lot of money growing up. So whenever we did go to rope, I needed to win. And it was so that kind of developed my style of throwing fast. And I try to go for the first day money if I could, because if I win the first day money, I can rope the rest of the day, you know. And if usually if you make a few pretty fast few runs right there, all you got to do is catch the next couple steers. So my style developed from where I grew up, man. It's just kind of as your first or last, you know, you got to win. And for me to get where I wanted, the national finals and stuff, and I realized at a young age, you know, I had to get away from the guys that were kind of holding me down and try to get around more of the positive rodeo kind of guys that I felt like were going to make it, you know. And my time right around that, you know, Colter Todd was a real big inspiration for me. Like, he was a real, like, my best friend. And this guy was a good guy, man. He went to church all the time. He tied, like, he had his cows. He roped real good. He never seemed like he was a perfect person, you know, like, he never messed up. So I was drawn to him always because I knew he was going to be an NFR qualifier too, but he healed at the time. And he was always just a little bit better than me. And he'd win just a little bit more than me. And it, like, he was always like, he pushed me to get better. And he reached a level in his healing that he probably could have made the finals, but he was having a hard time getting somebody to rope with him and head for him and give him the shot. So he started heading. And, you know, we roped so much together. We made the finals in 2006, and that's how it all started. But, man, me and him both come from kind of not very much. And I remember pulling into my first national finals rodeo in 2006. I had a camper, and I had a pickup truck, and I had a little three-horse bumper pull. And I pull up next to this big Freightliner, man. It's just this biggest, fanciest thing. And you know, my rig was little and it was small, but I unloaded this bay horse. I still have him right now. My 5-year-old rides him, and he's just a beautiful bay horse, long mane, long tail, just gorgeous horse. And you know, like he gave me a lot of confidence to make the finals too, because I felt like when I showed up on that horse, I had the best horse there was. He was, you know, like some of my buddies I let ride him, you know, some of my heroes, Cody Cowden rode him and he liked him, and Corey Coons got to ride him and he really liked him. A few of my heroes like that, so I knew he was a cool horse.
That's so awesome.
It's just kind of the start of it, really. I just, you know, where I grew up kind of developed me to who I am today.
So. Yeah, and it is very important, you know, the people that you hang out with, you know, talking about Colter Todd, your partner, you know, he was a little bit better than you, and you hung out with him a lot and you wanted to be good. Like, you worked hard just to be like him. I know that you've heard the saying, you know, hang out with 5 millionaires, you will be the 6th. You know, if you hang out and compete with people that are better than you, they're going to elevate where you are. And, you know, the people that you hang around with and your friends and the people that you're in your inner circle are very, very important. And you, it's the perfect example. You were hanging out with one kind of group of kids that maybe could have got you in trouble. And then you had these other friends that were, you know, a little bit better. And you knew that these people were going to make you a better person. So, like, it just shows, like, if you had went down this path with, you know, like the gangbangers or like the bad kids, you would have done just what they were doing. But you chose a different path. You hang out with him. And there's a story that there was a rodeo that you really, really wanted to enter. And like you said, that money was tight. You couldn't really enter all the rodeos, but you really, really wanted to enter this one. So you went to that group of buddies that you probably shouldn't have been hanging out with, because they used to do some stuff and get some money. And you went and helped them out with something just so you can get some money so you can go to this rodeo that you really want to. And what were you, maybe like 12, 13 years old?
Man, I was a little bit older. I was in high school, the start of high school right there. So, you know, 15, 16 right there, right around that time. And it was actually a roping. And right about that time, I really started to try and, you know, roping was my hustle, I felt like, and it was going to be my way out. I love my grandparents and where I grew up right there. But like, I always wanted to travel. Like I wanted to see different places. It was, like I said, it was going to be my way out. And so some of these ropings that I wasn't able to go to, cause we, you know, money was a little tight sometimes. And, I remember, in high school, I kind of went to asking around some of my buddies and they're a little rougher crowd, kind of some gangbangers, and they told me, hey, if you want to make a little money, meet us over here. We're going to ditch school, and we got some stuff we're going to do. And I says, what do you need me to do? He says, you're a good guy. We don't want to get you in too much trouble. We just want you to walk around the block, you know, make sure there's nothing going on. Give us a whistle if anything bad happens, you know, keep an eye on the security guard there. And what they did was they stole cars. And so I made sure everything was good. They left and I got back to school. And next thing you know, they gave me a couple hundred dollars, which you know, like I was pumped up, but I just felt bad about it. I really did. I you know, growing up, I grew up Catholic, you know, like I go to Sunday school and all that stuff. We go to church all the time. So I there's God's in me, you know, and when I did it, I felt bad. I never felt like, you know, I never felt like that before in my life, especially at that time. It was something I felt horrible. And I went to the roping and I used the money and I ended up winning. And I remember going to Coulter's about that time too. I was always hanging out with Coulter and he was always going to church and he was always telling about tithing and stuff like that. And I remember when I won the roping, I felt like I needed to give the money back somehow. So I went and tithed 15% of what I won, and you know, I give that 200 back too. And shoot, like I said, it was I felt real bad about it, but after I tithed, I felt better. And it seemed like right about that time, you know, like I said, God's in me, and it felt like he seen how hard I was trying, you know, and I was working at it every day, and like I would do anything to be successful at rodeo, you know, and be a professional team roper and make the national finals. And so about that time, you know, like I really tried to hang out with Coulter more. Like it was funny, like if I had a weekend off, if the summertime, I was always over there with Coulter. Like I knew I would stay out of trouble if I was always around Coulter, because like he's real good about that. Like he wasn't going to get in trouble. Like he wasn't going to go getting drunk, and like he was focused on the rodeo the next day. And that guy won all the time, and his focus was just like he read the Bible, and like I said, God was in him too, and like he guided us both to our first NFRs, 2006, 2007, 2008, and we actually had a chance to win the world. We're both runners up in 2007 to win a gold buckle. And about that time, you know, Coulter, he was always a cowboy kid, you know, he always loved the ranch. He wanted to prove to himself he's one of the best headers out there. And in 2008, he told me, about the middle of the year, he told me he was wanting to quit. And I seen in his eyes, you know, that he was not kidding. And he said, I'll give you one more year. I'll give you 2008. We make the finals. But after that, I'm done. And we made the finals in 2008. We kind of had a tough start right there, but we finished off really good. And the last year, professional steer, he roped. We won the last day money at the national finals, the 10th round. And I wear the buckle still this day. It's one of my most memorable heel shots. Just kind of let my one of my best friends, one of my heroes, my mentors, we left on top, let him go
out on top. Yep.
He went and used that money that we won that week, and he went and leased a ranch, bought some cows, and now he's real successful. He's got quite a bit of land. He's got some cows. He's got some kids, and everything's going great for Coulter. I'm real happy for him.
That's awesome. That's an awesome story.
It's growing up in the hood a little bit. It kind of like I said, it made me the person I am today. I can kind of go and hang out with anybody. I feel like from the guys on the street there, I can go hang out with CEOs, and you know, I can do all kinds. I'm real thankful for how I grew up and where I grew up that made me who I am today.
Yes, yes, a very well-rounded person. Me and Ryan, the you know, owner of Best Ever Paths, we're always talking about well-rounded people, you know, him being a surfer and his kids, very athletic family. Yeah. I've had a lot of fun with them, with the best ever family over there. And you're the same way, you know, very well-rounded, diverse person, can get along with a lot of people. And for those of you that don't understand how big of a deal the NFR is, this is like the Super Bowl of rodeo. It's very tough to make it. And to make it nine straight times, you made it nine straight times, right?
Yeah, nine in a row, yeah.
Nine in a row, that is a very big deal. That's like making it to the Super Bowl nine times in a row. Like there is a handful of guys that do make it consistently every year, or they might skip one here or there, but nine straight times, that's a very, very big deal. That just goes to show how talented you are, how successful you were like, and you're not done yet. And like, I know that, you know, like the last few years been a little different, but it is, you know, when you have a family, your priorities shift just a little bit. But you went 9 times. That's good in itself. 9 straight times. 2014 was the last year, right?
Yep. And I got to give a lot of credit out to my headers there. You know, Coulter Todd and Derek Begay and Tom Richards was the one I made it with last year. But you mentioned football. Those guys are the best quarterbacks that I've had the opportunity to rope with. I've roped with several here recently that rope really, really well too. But man, all those guys were Arizona guys, you know, and I grew up with them a little bit, and there was like a brotherhood, and I knew exactly how they grew up. They knew exactly how I grew up, and they knew that I had to win just as bad as they did. And that, I feel like that helped me be successful. And the heel horses that I ride, for some of people that don't know horses, it's just that's my favorite animal. There's something about them. They're so smart. For what I ask them to do is very unnatural. For them to work the way they work for me, it's just amazing. I got to give a lot of credit out to the horses. I've had nice ones. And like I said, still have the one that I made the finals on my first year, and my 5-year-old rides him. So, and he's teaching him how to ride. So you can only imagine how cool of a horse he is. He's just like I said, he's my favorite. He doesn't owe me anything, you know. He's awesome. I'm really thankful that I feel horses really helped me when I was a kid growing up and stuff. And, you know, having going to school and being around those kids that didn't really have much going on, they didn't have any responsibilities. And when I got home, I had horses and I had cattle and I you got to exercise your horse if you want to be successful. It's just, you're like training a football player or any kind of athlete. You got to feed them good. You got to exercise them, and you got to go through drills. You got to practice and do it that way. Whenever you go perform on the highest level, you're ready to go. And so that kept me out of a lot of trouble, maintaining my horses and keeping horses around. And if anybody listening, you know, have had horses, they know exactly how hard it is to maintain a horse. You know, cleaning pens every day. You know, like, it's a lot of work. So I'm thankful for horses and rodeo for keeping me out of trouble. And if I without them and the family that I have, you know, it would have, I don't know where I'd be. I probably wouldn't be here today. I promise you that much.
Yeah. And it does, you know, they say that it takes a village to raise a child, that saying. It takes a village to help somebody go down the road, especially make it to the NFR. You have your family, you have your partner, which I've heard that you're a very loyal person. You know, stick with your partners even when, you know, kind of stuff's going, not really going your way. Sometimes, like, people will get with a partner, a certain header, a certain healer. It doesn't start off good. They're going to switch. They're going to try to change it up, do something different. You have had your family, you've had your horses, taking care of your horses very well. So you know how much help and how much work it takes to make the NFR. 2014, you didn't really have the best NFR. And then after that, you've said that you kind of went into like a little bit of a dark place. Do you think making it 9 times and not winning that world championship, do you think as the years went on, you might have started to put too much pressure on yourself? You know, because you did have a chance to win it and you didn't. You had been there. What do you think happened there at the end, 2014, to where kind of lead you to where you are now?
It was right there, 2015, 2016. You know, like, I was pretty frustrated why I didn't make the national finals. And, you know, 2015 is when they started adding a bunch of money. It almost,
that was, and that was the first year you hadn't made it, right?
Yes, sir. It was like the brand new national finals. That's when it just seemed like a lot of televised stuff. Like, it, the social media stuff really blew up about that time, you know. And like, I got to see it all, and I was just frustrated that I didn't get to make it, and it was all my fault more than anything else. I had some good partners. I feel like rodeoing is pretty tough, you know, trying to keep finances and everything. And I sold a really nice heel horse right about 2014. It was kind of the start of the season. And I went to replace him, and I didn't replace him with something that she was a little bit younger. She was a nice horse, but just not ready for what I was taking her to. It was almost like a college guy going to the pros right away. You know, it might take a little while to get caught up and get caught up with the pace. And I asked a little bit too much out of my horses, and I was trying to find the right ones. And not sometimes when you don't spend enough money for these horses, they're costing nowadays for an A1 heel horse is $30,000 on up. And so I was trying to buy a heel horse for $15,000-$20,000, which ain't going to cut it at the pro level. And like I said, I kind of went in a dark spot right there, frustrated at myself, frustrated at my horses. And I talked to a buddy of mine, Dakota Kirchislager, about that time. And he says, man, we got to work on your horsemanship. We got to reset your horses and get your horses lined out again if you want to get close to making the finals again. And since then, I've had some really, really nice horses. I built my herd back up, and I got some nice horses. But like, it's like football, you know, if you're out of the game for a few years and you try to get back in it, you mentioned it earlier, these guys nowadays do not mess around. Their times are faster than ever. My style of healing is real fast, and there's guys on every block that throw fast nowadays and rope real, real well. They got nice horses, you know, so now trying to make the finals is harder than ever, I feel. The times are faster, the guys are good, there's more guys out there. The horses are really well, like, bred well. They're almost like the people that rope on them. They're supposed to be doing this. And it's fun to watch nowadays and be a part of, and I'm helping a lot of young guys. Some guys that I've helped when they were first coming up are now making the finals and have a chance to win the world and stuff like that. So it's just really, really cool to see where the game's changing. Yeah, I'm 37 now. I got a wife and three kids, and I got a mortgage and stuff. I'm kind of an older guy, and so I'm just pretty pumped because those guys kind of pushed me to get better, and I've learned a lot about horsemanship. I've learned a lot about my roping. I feel like I've gotten better, especially with horses and younger horses. The rope horse maturity was a couple weeks ago, and I showed a four-year-old, and I placed on a four-year-old over there. So that was pretty cool. You know, pro rodeo horses don't get real, real good till they're about 10. And so, you know, the age there is just like equivalent to a high school football player, you know, and it was pretty cool. Like I got to ride that horse at a high level against some of the best horses in the country. And so that was kind of my national finals this year. And I rode good over there, and I helped a buddy win a world title over there. So this year, I feel the COVID deal kind of hurt me a little bit, but it actually got me to be a better horseman and a better rider. I got a few really, really nice horses and young ones coming up, and looking forward to the future.
Yeah, that's it. And as you're saying that everybody nowadays is so good, so talented, so fast. A lot more athletes are coming into the game. Very, very athletic people that can rope. Everybody at that level can rope. Very, very good. It's just like baseball. You know, like when I got into the minor leagues, you're told everybody's good at this level, and you see it. Very, very talented. Everybody is very, very, very good. There's certain things that are going to separate you from these other very, very talented individuals, and you have to figure out what that is. You know, being consistent, staying healthy, staying in tip-top shape all the time. And in the rodeo world, I believe being a good horseman is what separates the very talented people that don't make it versus the very talented people that do make it. Would you agree that horsemanship nowadays is at a premium like it's never been?
It's more important now than ever. and guys are learning that and getting better. You're going to watch this year's national finals, and you're going to see a lot of young guys that rope real well, especially on the heel side. But I feel nowadays the headers are taking more chances. They're taking three-point shots, trying to win the game. And you know, the healer's got to catch the steer. The handle's not going to be perfect all the time, but we're supposed to catch no matter what, no matter what handle's thrown at us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about being in the right position at the right time. And being a good horseman allows you to get your horse in the right position every time. Used to, I feel like olden days, you know, it wasn't even that much, that long ago. I'm talking about 15, 20 years ago. Guys are really good with the rope, and they could have an average horse and still get by. Nowadays, you have to be really good with your rope, and you have to have a horse, a top-notch horse. The better horse you got, the better roper you'll be, it seems like, nowadays. So everybody's looking to buy a really, especially the guys that are going to the pro rodeos and pro level. The headers are spending $200,000 for head horses nowadays. It's crazy. The healers are spending $100,000 for them. But you look at it, if it's something that can get you to the national finals, it's going to be an investment, and you'll get your money back as long as you keep the horse healthy and keep him going. And me personally, I don't work out, but nowadays there's a lot of young guys that are working out and getting better. Like, the game is evolving and changing. And for me, to keep me in tip-top shape and keep me riding really good, I got a lot of young horses. And so I get up and I ride in the morning and exercise a lot and work on my horsemanship. I ride a lot of reining horses and really broke cow horses. And so that's actually helping me ride, is by riding them. They're actually teaching me a few things. And so I can make the next horse I ride feel the same way. It's just trying to get better. Like I said, these guys are not messing around these days. Everything's evolving, and so you got to change with the times if you want to hang with them nowadays.
Yeah, that's right. You have to adjust. You have to figure out what it is that you need to do to make it at this time right now for this year. And this year, normally it's in Las Vegas at the Thomas and Mack, little bitty, very, very fast setup. That's where it's usually at. This year, it's going to be in Texas at the Rangers' brand new baseball stadium. Little bit different arena, little bit different score. The headers are going to have to see them a little bit farther out. Times might not be as fast. How do you see this 2020 NFR going? Do you think it's pretty much just going to be like catch 8 or 9? You're gonna win the average. Do you think it's going to be fast, tough? How do you see it?
You know, battling now with these guys that are making the finals this year, they're all my buddies, and you know, I look up to all those guys. It's not easy making the finals, but I feel the times you might not see too many threes, but you're going to see a lot of 4 second runs. They're going to be out there just a little bit farther, but you're going to see some really cool team roping runs. You know, me getting to see these guys battle it out every day. Some of these rodeos we go to are set up like that, and a header is going to be able to get out a little wider and set the steer up a little bit better, and the healer is going to have a little more room to maneuver, and he's going to be able to throw fast. So you're going to see a lot of teamwork out there, but I really feel you're going to see a lot of 4 second runs, maybe some low 4 second runs. It'll be fast still, and it'll be very competitive because those guys, like I said, this year was so fierce. Those guys, it was awesome to be a part of it, to get to see the toughest year in rodeo. The reason is because they canceled a lot of the bigger rodeos due to the COVID, and so all the little fair rodeos, the smaller rodeos, were allowed to have the rodeo because they usually didn't get as many people, but they got twice as many contestants and twice as many people go to these rodeos. And it was good for the small committees and stuff like that to, and it was good for the town. It brought a lot of money to the town, and it made for every event, team roping, bull riding, barrel racing, they got a new event, Breakaway, now. And that was pretty cool to watch. You know, there's some, some really talented women out there. And I feel like the game of rodeo is really evolving. It's a sport now. Like it's like people are taking it really serious, a lot of money in it now. And I just, like I said, I'm thankful to be around these times, because I've never seen roping like it is right now. It's so tough and competitive, and just gotta work hard to stay with the top of the game with these guys.
Yeah, it is. The sport is growing. We were talking about the World Series finale that they have there at the South Point at the same time as the NFR. They're giving away $350,000 to just average Joe amateur ropers. Like they have a day job, and these people are winning more money than they are at the NFR. Like, rodeo's in a good spot. It's growing. They're paying a lot more money. You know, social media has a big influence on it. I know you have a pretty good following. And people enjoy that. They enjoy seeing their favorite headers or favorite heelers or their favorite barrel racer compete at all these rodeos. And it's just bringing more fans, bringing more monies, bringing more sponsors. So you see a few other rodeos getting up to the level of the NFR, you know, like the American, like some of these other rodeos that are, you know, getting pretty big time now. But there's nothing like the NFR, right? I've been there a few times as a fan. I've watched it, and it's electric. Going to this, like, I got to tell you right now, if you're listening, even if you're not a rodeo fan, you have to experience the NFR at the Thomas & Mack in Vegas. It is one of the best experiences I've ever seen. It's Vegas's biggest time of the year. Right? It's packed yeah. Full of people. Every casino is packed, and they're all there wearing cowboy hats, jeans, and boots going to watch the NFR. So from you as a contestant, I know it's you got to take it very, very serious, because this is, you know, pretty much your job that you have to do. But as a contestant, what's it like roping in that building in the NFR for that kind of money?
Something about that place. I've watched it at restaurants, but your adrenaline gets it going. I've watched it in the stands, and it's just the coolest rodeo. I think that there's so much adrenaline going on in there, so much electricity in there. To compete in it, it's something that I dreamed of doing ever since I was a little kid. You know, I'd stay up late and watch national finals rodeo, and go to school just tired the next day because I stayed up, you know, all night watching the national finals, watching my heroes rope. But to get to compete in it, there's nothing like it. Like, I feel like I talked to Jake Barnes about it. He tells me that's the reason why he rodeoed as long as he did, is to make the finals. There's something about that adrenaline rush. There's something about how it makes you feel to rope in front of all them people. And, you know, you're roping in front of millions of people watching you, and 18,000 in the stands. And so they line you up in order, you know, how you go that night. So, you know, they line you up from 15th all the way to one, and it rotates two every night. So when it's like a gladiator, right? You know, you watched a few shows like that where you they're lining you up, and the next guy goes, and you know, you can start getting closer to the tunnel there. And you can start hearing the crowd more, and you can start hearing the feet thumping, and you know, people clapping and cheering. And then when you're fixing to be up, you're next up, you kind of get to peek out, and you get to see out everybody, and you get to hear the roar, you get to hear everything. And like I said, there's nothing. I've roped that quite a few rodeos, and that's what keeps me going. That's what keeps me loving it, is that adrenaline rush that I get. But there's nothing like the national finals, man. And then your horse feels it too, you know, and your heart's just thumping out of your chest. And when the steer leaves the box, it, like, everything for me anyways, when I was there, everything would just go to quiet. And it was just me and the steer out there. And then when I would rope, as soon as I would dally, I'd go to pull and get the flag. And all of a sudden I could hear the crowd again. It was, and especially if I did good, you know, like, man, there was no feeling like that. I hope to make the finals again, just for that feeling that it makes me feel over there. It's just nothing like it. You feel like a celebrity over there too. Like you said, there's cowboys everywhere, and you're walking you're walking, you're going to the restaurants, you're just doing things in town. People are asking for your autographs. Throughout the week, you go sign autographs for your sponsors, going over to Best Ever Pads and hanging out with Ryan and Tammy and signing autographs for them. It was awesome. You'd have people come over and, you know, they're big Hawaiian people, so you see a lot of the brides come by and the aunties and sisters, you know, everybody. It's kind of fun, you know. And like I just get a kick out of the finals, and like I said, it's in Arlington this year. It'll be a little bit different feel, but I promise those guys will be pumped, and especially guys that have the first time getting there, they'll tell you there's nothing like that, getting a real
shows. Just shows how big it is, you know, talking about people coming from the islands, the Hawaiian islands, over to watch. I remember last year, a couple years ago, no, it's probably like 3 or 4 years ago, I went, and we take one of the buses from the South Point, takes you right there to the Thomas and Mac, and the people sitting right next to us were from New Zealand. The people sitting behind us were from Australia. People were traveling all over the United States and all over the world to watch this rodeo, and it's sold out every single year. Tickets are not easy to get. It's sold out. It's awesome. But for you, it's there for business. I know that you enjoy it. It's one of the best things, but most people, most fans don't realize what you guys have to do during that whole 10 days, or probably actually a lot longer, because you guys are getting there early, breaking in the steers, doing all that stuff. What's a typical day, you know, say like round four, you have to do, I know you got to do a lot of stuff before, like you're talking about your sponsors. What's a typical day for you as a contestant during the NFR?
You know, it varies for different people, but mine in particular, I'm kind of a different cat. If you haven't really, after this interview, you probably understand, but I'd start my day off first thing in the morning, and I'd have my family there. I'd give everybody a kiss, and I'd go play some golf in the morning first thing. I hit the Callaway.
Hell
golf
yes! Back, hell back. Yes!
Yeah, I'd go play. I was first one out, so they knew me by name over there by the end of the week. But say we're around four, I'd go hit some golf balls and kind of clear my mind for about an hour and a half. It's a 9-hole course, so I'd be able to play that in an hour and a half pretty easy. So then I'd come back to the room, get kind of cleaned up. I got a helper over there helping with my horses at the national finals there every year. So my helper would get there early and take care of stuff. About that time, I would, this would be about 8 o'clock or so, 9 o'clock, I would run down to the horses, bring my helper some coffee, and, you know, check the horses out, make sure they're doing all right. A lot of the times we'd take them out of the stalls and let them roll and just kind of go about it that way. And just, you got to take care of your horse out there for sure. They get real sore, they get real tired. So after that, I would go into town and sign autographs. I try to hit up at least three sponsors. Say, you know, round four, I'd hit up Cinch Jeans, I'd hit up Best Ever Pads, and I'd hit Fastback Ropes. And I'd try to spend an hour with them a piece. And then when I'd go back to the room, I'd like to take a good shower, kind of get ready for the rodeo, and try to get kind of, about that time, you know, it's fixing to happen. So your adrenaline starts going and, you know, get pretty serious about it. And so I'd get back to the horses and start saddling horses and getting them ready. The National Finals Rodeos is pretty cool because they have a big grand entry, and every contestant is mandatory for them to ride in it. So it was really cool to start off at the National Finals Rodeo that way, because you can kind of cheer and get it all out. You can look up at the stands and you can kind of wave at your family and go about it like that. And then you're ready for the finals. You're like, it's now you're ready. Like, your adrenaline's going, you're ready to rope. And that's the hardest thing, is because like it's at 6:45 at night, and you get done roping about 8 o'clock, you know, and your adrenaline's going. You're in Vegas, your adrenaline's going. And so I'd cool my horse out a lot, and I'd try to, you know, go have dinner if we have some family in town. And it's a busy, if it's that's pretty much my day, but like it's a busy 14 days, it's 2 weeks there. And you break in the start off. And believe it or not, it feels like it can't get started soon enough. And as soon as that first round goes off, bam, it's round 10 and it's done. And in that time, if it was your week, it was a fun week. If it wasn't your week, it was too long.
Pretty tough. You're ready to get home. Yeah, pretty tough. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, you mentioned that's how rodeo is. You're either going to win or you're not. It just kind of depends on you and your partner. And that's the thing with team roping too. It's double. You know, if your partner ain't roping good that day, you're gonna have a hard time winning. And so it's like I said, team roping stuff. You got two horses, you got two people, and you got one steer trying to get away. And so it makes it pretty difficult when the run does happen and you make a good clean run and there's no feeling like it. You put in a lot of hard work and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears.
You have a lot of thoughts running through your mind, especially when you say you hit round three or four and you guys haven't won a check yet. You get to thinking, it's like, man, what are we doing? Should we just go out there and catch? We do this. I got to change ropes, you know, all this stuff. And a rope is very, very important to a roper. It's like somebody's golf clubs, you know. See some of the best golfers in the world, Tiger Woods, very, very rarely changes out his clubs. Like, that's your weapon. Like, your rope is very, very important. And I remember you saying one time that, like, the first time that you went, people were telling you that you need to use the rope with the core, and then people were telling you that you don't need to use a rope without a core, and you need to use a really heavy rope, you need to use this rope, and you get all these other thoughts. And you're talking about fastback ropes. I'm a fellow fastback guy. Great people over there, Coy and Terry. They're, you know, just awesome. And you've been a pretty big, like, helper with their new ropes, like the line of ropes that they've come out with, because you're obviously one of the best ropers in the world. They've developed all these ropes. But I just want to know, like, I know a rope's like a very, very big deal, but when you get to thinking about it in your head, do you like have to switch ropes, or like, how do those thoughts change you as a roper, man? Like, people are telling me I can't use a rope with a core. I got to use a stiff rope. I got to use a more limber rope. What's all that process like?
I'm a different cat than most. I do things a little different. I'm a feel guy. Whatever feels good at the time for me. Sometimes it depends on the cattle that I'm facing that day. If I'm roping big cattle, big strong type steers, I'm gonna try to use a little bit heavier, like stiffer, like firmer type rope. If the steers are little bitty tiny guys and they're fast hopping, you know, and they're not very big, I'll try to use a little softer rope, something that I can swing a little faster to keep up with their feet, because, you know, the littler steers they're going to be a little faster, a little quicker. The bigger steers aren't going to move as fast. They're going to cover a little more country, but it's going to be almost slow motion. So I'm a big feel guy. I'm a big visual guy. I like using bright colored ropes. I like to be able to see my rope go through, you know, hit the legs. I talked about earlier how at the finals, when I feel like I'm completely focused and you know, in the zone, as a lot of people call it, but like I everything goes quiet and it's just me and the steer. I need to be able to feel like I'm ahead of the steer with my rope all the time. So like I said, I'm a big feel guy. If the rope, I'm swinging the rope and I'm fixing to rope some big steers, I want a big, strong, firm feeling rope, and just kind of vice versa.
That is pretty interesting how you're saying that you're a different cat. That do most guys just stick with the same rope, same lay, pretty much every rodeo, no matter what?
Yeah, they do. And some guys will go from, say, heel ropes, for example. They'll go from a hard medium to a medium hard, which is just a little bit firmer rope. But I call them a man's rope. You know, they're hard to swing, and they're all there. You got to Kyle Lockett. He uses the man's rope. That's a man right there. You know what I'm saying? But like for me in particular, I'm not a big guy. So I need to be able to feel like I can keep up with the steer. And so if I don't feel like I can swing a bigger rope, a firmer rope as fast. And so when I rope bigger steers, I can stay ahead of them. When I'm facing littler steers, little cattle, they move real fast. They're fast. Their legs are going everywhere. It seems like I got to be able to swing my rope to keep up with them. So that's why I go back down to say I'll use a medium or hard medium for lighter type steers. I've even gone to medium softs. But when I'm facing some big, strong steers, like the guys are roping at the National Finals Rodeo, I'm going to dang sure use the stiffest, firmest, heaviest rope I got, because those steers, you know, being at the finals in the past, if your loop just doesn't hit the ground perfect, they just kick your loop out. Like, it's almost like Shaquille O'Neal, just you go for a layup and he just, just get out of here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what it's like over there whenever it feels like your rope, you know, like you're not ahead of the steer. Their legs are so big, steers are so big, they just kick your rope out of there. And so
wow. You
see guys roping at the finals when they rope really good and clean, everything is hitting perfect. The guys that are messing over there, you'll see their loop, if you'll slow down slow motion, the loop just doesn't quite hit right, and the steers just kick it out of there. I got to stay ahead of the steer somehow, so that's kind of how I decide what rope I'm going to use at the time.
So do you use all you use all three of Fastback's new ropes? Do you use all of them?
Yeah, I do. I got quite a few cobalts that I use. I use the Venom quite a bit. It's just a little bit lighter. I've been doing the show horse stuff, and you know, it's pretty full contact with those things. When you dally, they really face up the horse, and so I've been burning my hands quite a bit and roping a lot. So the Venoms feel good to me. That's another thing that helps me decide what rope I'm using at the time. I've had several, you know, I beat my right hand up pretty bad. I've cut my thumb off, and I broke my pinky several times. I cut the tip of my pinky off my roping hand.
You were pretty young when you cut your thumb off too. So you've pretty much roped without a thumb your whole career.
Yeah, and I'm thankful it happened at the age that it was. It was 12 when it happened. And I was still learning how to rope and everything about that time. Guys now, say if Jake Barnes, for example, or my buddy Dakota Kurtz's logger, they cut their thumbs off later on in their career when they were already making the national finals. And to make that transition to those guys made it again, you know, after cutting the thumb off, that's one of the hardest transitions to do, because they've already learned how to rope. And now that you got to change your style all the way around, because the way you're holding the rope is going to be completely different than it used to be. And so,
yeah. So the feel of the rope is very, very important for you. That's probably why you do change it up a lot, because, you know, you've had to deal with that for a long time. They like people that it happens later in their career, which this is actually, I don't want to say that it's a common injury, but like it kind of sucks. Like people, it happens. People cut their thumb off team roping, and they still continue to do it, and they still rope very, very good. But that's probably why you have a little bit different feel, and you like to change up with ropes and everything.
Yeah, you know, you're going to see a lot of ropers with missing limbs, and I call it it's an occupational hazard, and it's just kind of part of the game. If you're going to get to a higher level of roping, and you know, it's just like baseball, you know, it gets faster. The higher level, everything is faster. You know, the speed of the pitches, you know, everything, the speed of the game, everything gets faster the higher level you get to. And so, you're thinking about, if you get your hand in the dally, you got a 550 pound steer at one end, and you got a 1200 pound horse locked down, and you got your finger in there, something's going to give. So that's why one thing that I feel like I'm spreading my knowledge as much as possible with safety and the roping and stuff like that. I help people out with their dallying, but more so controlling their horse. So if anything happens, they can kind of maybe get their horse to go forward and stuff like that. I feel like when accidents happen in the roping game, it's when somebody loses control, the person loses control of something, and you know, whether it's the steer, the horse, or whatever, and that's when accidents happen.
Yeah, I mean that stuff does happen, but I mean you have to learn kind of a way to prevent it. How you're teaching young kids, you know, there's maybe they're not using the right style, kind of get them in trouble a little bit. And it happens with younger kids or people that don't really know how to rope or they don't have very good horsemanship. People can get into some jams. It's a very, very, it can be a very, very scary sport at times. You know, people get to go in too fast, can't really control their horse, and you have a rope and it's like attached to your saddle, especially people that are tied on, they get in some wrecks. But I mean, people love it. They get after it. Like, especially people that are fans, they go watch a big rodeo. They can't wait to get home and rope. So they can rope, you know, just like Cesar De La Cruz, all fast stuff like that. And I like to watch some of the BFI highlights, and mostly cause I just like listening to Bob Tallman talk. Like, he's the greatest announcer. And I remember one of the highlights was with you. I think it was when you and Derek won second. And he just put so much pressure on that top five. He's just telling you guys, like, don't break out, don't catch a leg, all this. And he just has the voice, and like, it's, everybody's just glued and locked on. Do you guys hear him when you're like back in the box? Do you feel that? Like, do you kind of just, does that fuel you, get your blood pumping a little more?
I love the Bob Bison Invitational, that rope and some of the bigger ropings like that. I can get myself into the zone a little bit better, where I don't see nothing, I don't feel nothing. I'm just out there competing, you know, just me and the steer out there. I hear it a little bit, but more so, especially after the run, I start hearing it a lot, especially when the crowd cheers and stuff. But no, I have people ask me that all the time. Do you hear them, guys? I'm trying to get, I get so focused in what I got to do. I'm just thinking about riding my horse and I just the steer, and you know, like the water boy, you know, he thinks of everything negative. Yeah. You know, and he runs through them guys and he tackles really good. And me, I kind of think about stuff like that, you know, things that make me angry or whatever, and I just, it just makes me see the feet and follow the cow and you know, because the headers, sometimes they're trying to be so fast that the handle is not going to be just perfect every time. So you're got to be paying attention all the time. You know, like whatever the steer does, you got to react to it. It doesn't matter what the header's doing. It's just you and the steer out there. And if I can stay in that mind frame, I usually do well. When I don't do as good as when I start hearing things, you know, I start hearing the announcer stuff and I start, you know, thinking about the wrong things, you know, thinking about what I got to do tomorrow, you know, stuff like that. And I got to be all up in the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Cause you're not fully present in that moment. Yeah. Like you said, when you're present, you're, you know, like you're focused on the steer, you're seeing what that steer is about to do when he's making that corner and you can rope him switch right there. This podcast called One Degree, obviously, you know, difference in hot water and steam. And I like to ask, you know, these very, very well accomplished athletes, ropers like yourself, what that one degree difference was for you. It's a very, very small change, but can make a huge difference. So for you, being a healer, make it to the NFR, being one of the best in the game, what do you think got you at that top level? How come you are so much better than a lot of the other people?
My style, where I grew up, kind of gave me that little bit of a fight. My grandfather was a World War II veteran. My Uncle George made the national finals, so I had an idea what I needed to do to make the national finals, and kind of had the right people with me. But I was willing to die for it. I really was. I'd leave in the middle of the night to go to another rodeo the next day, and I'd go by myself because, you know, rodeo, it's all on you. Some people try to get in with other guys to go. Me, I'd go wherever. I just wanted to go compete. Especially about my rodeo in time, I got my professional card. I got my good bay horse, Johnny Ringo, about that time. And we kind of, he was a young horse, and we taught each other out there. And the difference, like I said, I think how I grew up and where I grew up was a difference. And then when I got that horse, it made a huge difference. And I got to give a lot of credit to God, my family, my wife now. she helped me a lot get to the finals, driving all night, and, you know, putting up with me. I feel like God blessed me with the right opportunity and everything, and I just try to go and do the things that he wanted me to do, and I'm very thankful for that. Like I said, I think the difference was how I grew up.
Yeah, that, like, you grew up horsemanship, family, and that you just wanted it more than other people. Like you said, you're willing to die for it. Like Will Smith was talking about, like, the difference in, like, him and other people. He would, you know, talk about getting on the treadmill. He said that he will die on that treadmill before he gets off first. And sometimes that's just what it takes, and that's just something inside people that just makes them successful, is that, number one, they love it so much, and then two, they're willing to die for it, and that's what brings out the best in you.
Well, yeah, I feel like I know it sounds like a lot when you're willing to sacrifice everything for one thing, but you got to remember, when I was about 15 or 16 years old, I made a decision that was what I was going to do, and I was going to rodeo, and I'm going to rope, and this is my ticket to get out of this place, and I was going to see the world. This is my ticket, and because of it, I've got to go to Brazil, I've got Canada, Mexico, I got to travel the world and see different places, and I'm really thankful for, you know, roping, having a rope in my hand has given me the opportunity to do the things that I've only dreamed about when I was younger, and I'm just very thankful, you know. God's blessed me.
That's awesome. Yeah, we got to be thankful for all those times. Like, you know, I'm thankful for you joining me, telling me, you know, talking about your story, giving us the insight on some stuff, you know, because I'm sure not very many people realize how tough it is going down the road. And they might look up to you like you are a celebrity, how you are at the NFR and stuff. But, you know, you're just a normal guy working your ass off, and you love it. You love it. You, like, just amateur team ropers love it, and you love it just as much as they do. So appreciate you coming on, talking to us, Caesar. You're the man.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.